podcast you are about to listen to contains heavy spoilers, so if you have not seen the featured film we are discussing in this episode, please pause now and go watch before continuing. You have been warned.
What is it?
Where are you going?
I've got to return some videotapes. 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 Videotapes.
Hello and welcome to a special episode of I Have to Return Some Videotapes. My name is Armand.
And I'm Susan.
And we're joined by a special guest, returning guest on the show. You may have known him from the White Men Can't Jump and the Everything Everywhere All at Once episode. It's Archie.
Hello.
how are you doing, sir? It's been a minute.
Oh, I'm fantastic. You know how it is. You know how it is. Diamonds. You know how it is. Shining.
You out here getting the money?
Nah, I don't want to get robbed now. I'm still poor. You know what I'm saying? Poor.
Yeah.
And
it's okay.
I'm just what you call it. I just have enough. bus tokens for the whole ass month.
Yeah, no, I feel you. I feel you. We're all in the same boat. You know, but yeah. Yeah, no, we're gathered here today to talk about a film that I guess holds a special place in our hearts, at least for me and Archie. Mm-hmm. This is Susan's first time watching it, but yeah, we're gathered here today to talk about 1994's directed by Oliver Stone, Natural Born Killers. Very strange movie for Oliver Stone, because he's made a lot of just kind of if you look at his catalog, it's kind of more normal compared to this. It's very weird. He made a movie about Nixon right after this, starring Anthony Hopkins.
Wasn't it written by a Quentin Tarantino?
Yes.
Because it kind of reads as a Tarantino film.
So here's the history. Basically, Tarantino wrote a screenplay for this, and he ended up selling it to the people who wrote this movie. And then Oliver Stone was like, hey, like, I want to direct something kind of a little bit more...
edgy.
I guess, yeah.
Edgy.
However, Tarantino has disowned this movie. Really? I don't know why. I will say, I read the script today, and it's just okay.
Yeah.
All I will say, it's definitely a Tarantino script, because he finds a way to put the N-word in there.
He does.
He just loves to say the N-word.
You know, like, I'm curious, like, why did he, shout out to the N-word for once, but like, why did he disown it? Like, what was his?
I don't know, because like, I mean, for the most part, I read the script, and like, it has like kind of the basic plot points. Like, it starts out with them like murdering at the diner, and it like ends with like the prison escape.
Yeah.
The script is more focused on like the Wayne Gale stuff of like him like covering the whole thing and like the whole media spectacle. The compared to the movie, like, the script isn't as focused on Mickey and Mallory.
Interesting.
It is okay. I feel like the movie's a little bit more exciting. But then again, I'm biased. But...
Well, you know what? Like, I mean, based off of that, like something that focuses on Wayne Gale, like a whole movie that would focus on Wayne Gale, that sounds like it would be like super boring, especially because of the focus of the movie, which is like the spectacle and like the actual killers themselves.
Yeah,
and
so,
yeah.
Like, it's it makes a lot more sense that Oliver Stone
and the characters are not as exaggerated and like absurd and over the top in the script compared to the movie. So like, Wayne Gale is there's nothing in the script that says he talks with an Australian accent or you know, goes on these tirades. But yeah, I want to go back to the N-word thing, cause it doesn't even make sense when he says it. Like, it's in the diner scene where, you know, that famous eeny, meeny, miny, mo, catch a redneck. Yeah. But instead, Quentin Tarantino decided to put catch a N-word. And I'm like, it doesn't make sense. There's not even like black people
They're
in that scene.
White.
That's
it's just like, why do you like to say it so much?
He said this that, man that, just that loves was, it. That was also in, which I think it was Pulp Fiction, whenever Marcellus Wallace and Butch were in the basement, and they did that thing. It, at least there was a black guy there. You know,
like, yeah,
that,
like,
it made sense.
I've only seen 3 Tarantino films, and all I've taken away from is that he's a racist creep that loves dirty feet. So.
Like, there's nothing wrong with liking feet. It's a pretty common fetish, but putting it everywhere in all your movies.
His last movie, though, like, he put like Margot Robbie, like, putting her dirty feet up in like the theater, and it's like close up on her dirty feet with like.
Oh, and babe, I can't remember which movie this was from, but there was a movie where Salma Hayek came out in this.
That's Till Dawn. Yeah.
Kind of bikini ensemble, and she puts her foot in his mouth, and it's just
Oh, yeah, you know he was...
Ew!
He was happy that day on set.
Gross! This fucking creeper. Gross.
I'd be happy for a lot of body parts of Salma Hayek in my mouth, but I honestly wouldn't really approve of the foot. I'd probably be like one of the last ones, honestly.
Yeah. You know,
I'll put a lot of disgusting body parts in my mouth, but I mean, the foot just seems like... It's like fucking the door handle. You know, it doesn't really make any sense. You know?
Yeah, pretty much. But yeah, anyways, back to this movie. So yeah, this movie, yeah, we follow basically, it's essentially like a 90s version of Bonnie and Clyde, mm-hmm. where it's these two, one married, couple go on like a killing spree across the country.
And, except Bonnie and Clyde never got married.
Yeah.
Well, guess they weren't legally married.
Yeah, Mickey and Mallory Knox, I don't think they were legally married.
They just said they were.
Yeah, they just married in their own way.
Mm-hmm.
Said, I'm God, and I say that we are married.
Yeah, that whole thing, that was a very interesting part of it. But we'll get to that. We'll get to that.
But yeah, no, I'll be also jumping back and forth comparing it to the original screenplay by Tarantino, because yeah, like in the movie it fleshes out their characters and their backstory, whereas like in Tarantino's in the original screenplay, like you don't really get that much time with Mickey and Mallory. Like you see them in that intro scene in the diner, and then like you basically cut to them in the prison, and you don't get to basically spend that whole hour that you do within the film, like learning their backstory and following them on the fucking crazy journey. And yeah, essentially Mickey and Mallory met in a very strange way that you know, this movie's definitely, I guess you'd describe as a black comedy of sorts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that scene where they're parodying the I Love Lucy stuff.
Yeah.
With good old Rodney Dangerfield,
mm-hmm.
which shout out to him, man. That's such a, you know, I always associate Rodney Dangerfield with like, hey, everyone gets along and laughs at Rodney Dangerfield, but he plays such a fucking dark character.
Yeah, 100%.
In this movie.
Yeah, it was really
uncomfortable,
and it was weird seeing them put the laugh track over it, like they're trying to make it look like a sitcom.
Yeah,
yeah.
When it's just domestic and sexual abuse, like, yeah, that's horrible.
I think that was super intentional because mm-hmm. like the entire, I mean that scene specifically. I think that sort of scene Mallory Knox grew up in, that's a story that a lot of people like in the real world can mm-hmm. attest to, that, or like at least like a strong demographic can like identify with and whatnot. And the fact that it was juxtaposed with this this terrible home life. With this sexually abusive and emotionally abusive father, and this father who doesn't do anything and whatnot, like
mm-hmm.
that whole thing that's juxtaposed with this like I Love Lucy like all-time sitcom vibe is it's interesting. Like whenever you see like the I Love Lucy, whenever you examine like the I Love Lucy and like the sitcom sort of thing, it's supposed to be like the typical family sort of thing, like the typical middle America family. And
nuclear family.
Yeah.
And then it's like it's saying like this is like the actual reality of like that nuclear family, of like this is the reality of the situation, you know. And it's like that expectation and meets the reality, and it makes this sort of juxtaposed like terrible like product that makes like the viewer feel uncomfortable and whatnot. It's like the viewer's forced, like it looks at like, oh shit, like this is so crazy. And having Rodney Dangerfield on there, like, because even though he's saying all this terrible stuff, he's still speaking in that one-liner sort of way, you know, and everything's sort of like turned on its end, where the mother is also saying those kinds of prototypical like sitcom mother styles, but they're sort of ignoring what the terrible father is doing and whatnot. And it's very mm-hmm. It's very interesting to see how that relates to like the viewer and like also the audience inside the movie, like the actual like audience inside the movie and how that relates to Mickey and Mallory's impact over like the entire U.S. landscape overall.
Right.
Yeah, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
Damn. Yeah. It was well said, well spoken.
Right.
But yeah, like that's how we're introduced to them meeting, becoming, I guess, star-crossed lovers. And that's when Mickey mm-hmm. brings up the whole fate thing.
Yeah.
They keep bringing up fate, and mm-hmm. it's kind of like Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah. Yeah.
They also bring up look, fate
it,
a lot.
It ties in at the end, too, uh-huh. with the prison escape.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
So I will say this movie is subtlety and nuance. It is not words I would associate yeah. with this movie. It's a very like it's very bold in your face, kind of like I remember showing this to Joe. Shout out to Joe. Mm-hmm. We tried to get Joe on, but she was a little bit busy.
Right.
I remember showing this to Joe for the first time like 2 years ago. And she was just kind of like, what the fuck the whole time.
Yeah.
And
it is a what the fuck.
I kind of described it as like kind of like a storm that kind of never lets up.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're just dealing with a storm that never really like a hurricane, but you never really see the eye or the calm of the storm.
Mm-hmm.
Like you just never get a time to kind of breathe and soak it all in just because you're getting assaulted not only with the violence, but like with the visual style of the movie.
Yeah, thanks.
Like the movie's always changing uh-huh. like lenses and angles and like switching from, you know, live action to yeah, like freaking animation at some points.
Right.
Yeah.
So
I wouldn't call it a hurricane, but more like a Houston torrential downpour.
Yeah.
Like a very heavy thunderstorm.
Mm.
And I can definitely yeah. see how that'll rub people the wrong way because it's like it's an overload. It's an assault on the senses. But I don't know. It works. It's impressionable.
Yeah.
Again, I think with the chaos, there is flaws because, again, it tends to get a little bit messy and a little bit all over the place at some points.
A little.
But it's still, like I said, it leaves an impression.
It certainly yeah. does. It certainly does.
Like, I want to hear what you have to say, Susan, since this is your first time watching it. I want to, like, what it was your overall takeaway of the movie? Like, how are you feeling?
Watching this film kind of made me think about how, you know, you can't control how your audience views your art.
No.
Like, when you make something that is rugged and extreme and violent, whether it has a purpose or not, people are gonna take that and make it
yeah.
whatever they want. Like,
well, it's, you know, interesting you bring
I could bring up a personal account, but I don't want to get too personal, but bad people we'll see bad people on screen
mm-hmm.
and justify it.
Yeah.
And it has nothing to do with the art. It just has to do with how they view it.
Oh, yeah. And that's yeah. definitely what the film's commenting on at certain points mm-hmm. with the media, like the sensationalism, the whole spectacle of the entire thing, which also kind of goes back to Archie. Did you ever see Jordan Peele's new movie, Nope?
I have not seen Nope yet.
Okay. I don't want to spoil too much, but I feel like
movie.
I feel like Nope touches on similar themes of this movie, just in a more modern like lens.
It's more to do with the media, social media,
and then of course, since it's Jordan Peele, it yeah. also touches on like racism
yeah.
too as well. So
and celebrity,
yeah,
yeah.
But yeah, no. Speaking of, I guess like. Yeah, like how people view art. Like this movie is infamous because
mm-hmm.
it inspired a lot of quote unquote copycat crimes, and most famously it inspired the Columbine kids.
Yes.
They wrote like NBK like on their stuff.
Uh-huh.
And
they did.
Yeah, it definitely is.
Also the sunglasses.
Yeah, no.
They
yeah.
wore those sunglasses that what's his name? Mickey was wearing in the film.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Didn't know about that.
There was there was another thing I wanted to bring up. Trigger warning, by the way. Murder and...
Yeah.
Murder and sex work. You know that part of the film when Mickey and Mallory were in the motel room and they're having an argument?
Uh-huh.
And there's a woman being tied up, held hostage in the room. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It just occurred to me. I think that may have been inspired by, what's his name? Paul Bernardo and Carla Homolka. They're colloquially known as the Barbie and Ken killers.
Oh, okay.
They were from Canada.
That's
Carla
interesting.
Carla and Paul would kidnap teenage girls, rape them, and kill them.
Wow.
And this was in... I think it was in... I want to say Saskatchewan, but it wasn't.
But it took place like...
It was in the early 90s.
Oh, wow.
So that's, it was before this film. I think that was inspired by them.
That's very interesting you bring that up, because one of the security guards' last name is Homolka.
They were from Ontario.
That security guard with like the big-ass glasses who's like crying with the donut, his last name's Homolka.
Yeah, I think that was intentional, because it was... I feel like that little bit was inspired by them, and how because of Mallory's trauma... She's desensitized to the horrible things Mickey would do, like kidnapping, raping, and killing women.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it's okay, because he's her guy, and he wouldn't do that to her, so it's fucked up, you know?
But, yeah.
But I wanted to bring that up, a real-life story.
And then, after that scene, you know, she kind of leaves... go to that gas station where she where we see freaking Balthazar Getty, who
such a cutie.
He played a mechanic twice in two 90s films. Archie, I'm assuming you never saw Lost Highway by David Lynch, right?
You gotta see it.
Well, that scene where like Mallory Knox is like getting freaky with that gas station attendant.
Yep.
That same actor.
She also had a blonde wig.
Oh, yeah.
Like in the movie.
Yeah. In Lost Highway, same actor hooks up with a blonde girl multiple times in the movie.
Interesting. What, and he that also movie is happen, a guy. Was that movie aired before Natural Born Killers?
No, it came after.
Okay.
In 97. I also remember seeing a YouTube video where this guy was like doing a conspiracy that Lost Highway was David Lynch shitting on Natural Born Killers. And I was like, all right, that's kind of a reach, my dude, but okay. Because I guess some people think that some of this movie is kind of David Lynchian a little bit.
It is a little bit. I thought that the whole aesthetic of the film was kind of inspired by Wild at Heart. But it's a more violent, more depraved version of it.
Yeah.
Because Saylor, he only killed a guy, but it was in defense of Lua.
Yeah.
And he didn't enjoy hurting people. He was a good guy. They were just both free spirits who were out on the road trying to find a place that was their own.
Yeah.
And it got interrupted. And... it's a pure version of Natural Born Killers, because they're not killing people for fun. They don't enjoy that. They're good people. Yeah.
I mean, there is that also, that turning point in the movie where they, you know, get lost in the desert and come across the Navajo man. And they end up killing him.
Well, they had eaten shrooms before, and they were both really high. And they were having a bad trip.
Well,
and
Mickey was. He was.
Mickey was having
reliving
a bad trip.
Trauma from his childhood.
And the old man was performing a ritual.
Yeah.
With, I think, they don't say who he is. I want to say it's his grandson.
Mm-hmm.
But that made me really sad, because he took them in and gave them shelter, and he killed them.
Well, according to
killed him.
According to the plot synopsis on Wikipedia, it says that he's attempting to exorcise the demon that he perceives in Mickey.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, like, he's doing kind of an exorcism of sort. Yeah. And then you do see, like, the little projection on Mickey, the words demon that come across.
They're different words that are projected all on both
that
of them.
And like too much TV, which again, it's just like, all right, you're not being subtle with your messages.
TV bad TV.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, it's a movie. What?
Yeah. A lot of people have pointed out the hypocrisy of Oliver Stone because like he's made like three like war films, like mm-hmm. very violent war films. And then he has the gall to kind of turn around and be like, the media is so violent and like people are sensationalizing and profiting off this violence. It's like, my guy, you just made a movie about it.
It's like, dude, I think you love
violence. Well, it's that conundrum. It's that thing with satire. It's a slippery slope of where there's a thin line of like satire and then just repeating the thing that you are satirizing.
Right.
And yeah, I think this movie definitely kind of blurs the lines.
I think it's also like a connection between humans and the sensation or like the gravitation towards violence or just anything sort of exciting.
Yeah.
You see, like, especially mm-hmm. in this day and age, or like in, personally, I'm like into a lot of, I guess, UFC stuff right now. And Armand, you were into a lot of wrestling and whatnot. And a lot of things that, wrestling characters are taught is that bad publicity is better than no publicity, or even playing the heel can be beneficial to your career because it's more exciting. Mm-hmm. The point is to be talked about and not just having something being said that's good. The point is like to get like the audiences, to get the media's attention, to get everybody's eyes. It needs to be something mm-hmm. sort of fantastical, and it needs to be something that's sort of gravitating. And a lot of things is, it can be something nice, but it can also be something that's just, as we see from present day media or like from media from the past several decades, it could be a lot of things that are just very gruesome, that are considered negative, that are considered violent. And you see that with this mm-hmm. now. And this film, it really touches on the relationship between humans and like that. At one time, like, condemnation of violence, yet at the same time, like, the inability to look away or the inability to sort of identify with that sort of thing. We see that with the greater audience who reacts to Mickey Mallory's killing spree in the same ways that I'm sure, like, a lot of people reacted to Charles Manson and a lot of these other serial killers with, like, big... Uh-huh. And like Bonnie and Clyde, you know, who are, like, not only talked about for their murder spree, but also talked about in this, like, in this big way. We're, like, in the same way that Romeo and Juliet are, like, we're like Bonnie and Clyde sort of thing. And so it's becoming, like, this sort of positive thing. And...
kind of like they're inspired by them.
And it makes you wonder, like, is...
Yeah.
Is this this demon, like this demon that Mickey has been like shown like that he has, like, is it in everyone? Is he where like it's like a chicken or the egg situation? Like, is it like do we all have this sort of thing? And like there was this I'm gonna jump a little bit. Whenever the prison riot was happening at the very end, one of the what's his name? Whenever Wayne Gale was trying not to die mm-hmm. in all of the media shootings, one of the guards said, it was one of the inmates. He said, I really like your show. You do a lot of good for people and shit. And
I'm like, what's the good that you do for people?
I think that he was referring to like the tapping into like that wild emotion, like that wildness that causes like so many, it can cause a lot of positive things in the world, like a lot of inspiration, but it can cause a lot of things like copycat crimes. And in the case of this movie, it caused like a prison riot. It caused a whole like characterization, like the dramatization and the fascination of these serial killers, you know. And it made like so much mass media and we want like this dignified stuff as well, but we also want We want like a refined palate, but we also want McDonald's and shit like that. We want like just crazy shit. We want Coca-Cola with the polar bear. We want like all this fantastic shit. We want explosions and whatnot, you know. And it's like it's pointing to the audience is like, as long as you keep on watching it, as long as you keep on consuming it, it's gonna turn out, you know, because the eyes, no matter what, like they're, it seems like they're always gonna be pointing towards the abnormal, pointing towards the grotesque, and pointing towards like the different and the controversial.
Yeah. Wow, dude. Mm-hmm. No, yeah, well said. You know, going back to kind of like, yeah, like that whole chicken and the egg thing of like where this violence stems from. I mean, yeah, Mickey even brings it up in that interview with Wayne Gale where he's just like, yeah, like my father had it and I basically learned it from him. And but then he also says like love beats the demon, like his love with Mallory is kind of helping him. And then also that, you know, unfortunate situation of him shooting the Navajo man, like kind of like sparked a change in him. Like, okay, maybe I should stop just killing.
Seems like it's like whenever he says that love triumphs over over that demon, like it seems like it's in his own way, similar to how Mallory, like how we see Mallory's home life, and that it's like the love in that instance is kind of like the I love Lucy ideal, and the hate is like the actual real situation, and it kind of culminates together in this weird way, just like how Mickey and Mallory's like their love for each other and their killing spree. Like that's what it manifested under, like the them fighting for each other in this fucked up sort of way and destroying everything in their path to preserve themselves. Right. Is like this fucked up way of saying fuck you to the world. I'm gonna continue to live and treat the world back what I was given in this fucking fucked up twisted up way.
And I want to bring it back to Bernardo and Homolka. So their trial was a huge media sensation, not only in Canada, but also in the U.S. And it kind of brings up the question, at what point does the victim become the perpetrator? Because when Homolka was on trial, she said that she was under duress and she was just doing what he said. But she would also participate a lot.
Yeah.
Like it was her thing to go get the girl and bring her home. I have the same question about Mallory, because she did have a horrible home life. Her father sexually abused her and called her a stupid bitch all the time. Like that's gonna fuck you up in the head. But at what point does she stop being a victim? Because she does kill people and she does help him hurt other people. So is she a victim or a perpetrator now?
But let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Would you kill someone if they gave you bad head like she killed Balthazar
Getty? No, I'd kick him out of my house.
Depends on how bad the head was.
I'd say, we're done.
It's still an iconic scene. Just like,
it is.
The worst fucking head in my life. Next time, don't be so fucking eager.
Hey, I mean, that's some good advice.
Like there was, okay, the times where I've had really, I kicked him out of my house. I'd say, you know what, we're done.
Yeah.
Let me bring you to the door. Like, but if you don't have to kill him.
But if you happen to just be a mass murderer, you'd just be like,
I wouldn't be.
To answer your question,
I don't have the confidence. I'm too nervous. I'm a really anxious person. I don't think that's possible for me. Yeah.
To answer your question, honestly, personally, I think that you can be both. You know, like, I mean, one definitely leads. I mean, one, you know, like she grew up as a victim and it manifested into her being a continuous perpetrator. It was that sort of way, like the sort of natural born killers. It's a lineage and a thing that's getting passed on throughout. You know, and it doesn't excuse any of her actions. It doesn't excuse any of Mickey's actions, but it definitely explains it. You can definitely see, you can see where it comes from. At least you can see it doesn't, you can see that it doesn't necessarily come out of nowhere, you know? And so it's sort of,
right. There was definitely a root to the problem and it is an explanation, not an excuse. I say that all the time.
You can most like,
it's true.
It's all a part of that that media story, you know, like why Wayne Gale asks Mickey about his past and whatnot, and see that with real life stories like Charles Manson and Ted Bundy and so many other of these billions of documentaries that talk about the personal lives and like the whole history.
Yeah,
you know, it's it's something to look at, you know, and it's like I definitely don't think that it I think that they can be both, and it's a tragic way to live, and it is what it is, mm-hmm. you know, like, and it's the cards that sadly that they were fictionally dealt, and I think they know this right. from the beginning whenever they're talking about Mallory's talking with Mickey about the horses that she sees and that how there are going to be angels, and I think that they're talking about them going to hell, or at least like their death being a sort of inevitable punishment for their deeds and whatnot, because they understand the cards that they're dealt, but they're going through it like in this it's the only way that they know, you know, it's probably like too difficult for them to, you know, like to go to therapy and whatnot. It's probably difficult for them to like deal with it.
I don't think that's even crossed their mind. Yeah, I don't think they've even thought about therapy.
It's not even like any sort of conventional like that, like not like channeling it into art. Like that's the only other exceptional way, or like I guess I mean that's a debate within itself, like whether or not like the depictions of this sort of thing, because that's what this is, like it's a depiction of trauma and violence and perpetration and whatnot, and I lost my train of thought honestly, but like it's
okay.
No, speaking of trauma, I mean there is that little off that like dialogue, that like line that they give in the prison where they're like, oh yeah, like there's a psychiatrist that Mallory was seeing in the prison, but then he made the mistake of bringing up her past and so she killed him. Same thing. Speaking of, gotta give a shout out to the cast. Casting was amazing. It was. Fucking Robert Downey Jr. and
Adrian Brody.
Oh,
Adrian Brody was in it?
Look, that's citation needed according to Wikipedia.
Oh, okay.
It says he was uncredited as one of Wayne Gale's cameramen,
okay.
But
what?
The cast, like fucking Tommy Lee Jones.
Wouldn't we have
as
seen
the
his nose
warden.
In the shot if he was one of the cameramen?
Right.
Yeah, no. Tommy Lee Jones is the fucking warden, though. Like one of the most out there performances I've ever seen him deliver.
Really, like,
the same with Robert
animation.
Downey Jr.
Like Tommy Lee Jones is like the animation that he brings to the performance. It's for sure legendary. I haven't seen like a lot of Tommy Lee Jones's stuff, but like his it's based on the stuff that I have seen. This is so left field.
Yeah. Yeah, and honestly, people might criticize this movie for like these characters being like very cartoony and over the top, but it's fucking.
But that's what makes it fun.
Yeah, it's fun. It's someone
fun.
Should tell Tarantino that, because
no,
like,
he already said like you know that famous interview.
That's why I'm so
it's fun, Jan.
That's
it's
why I'm
fun.
So surprised that he hates this movie because like it's very over the top, like a lot of his stuff is.
It's fine.
And his screenplay is very reserved. Like, the characters are much more reserved in there. But I'm like, okay, but it's not as fun. And, like, again, this is early Tarantino. Like, this is before...
But it still really reads as a Tarantino film because of how over-the-top
Well, that's why he still got a credit for the...
And the colors and the music is very Tarantino.
He did, yeah. In the script, he did point out, like, specific songs that were meant to be played.
But it's also, like, that, the rich reds, the blues, the depth, the shadows.
And in the screenplay, like, Matt, like, he's pointing out, like... He's having Mallory singing like exact songs like most of the time she's in the prison.
Honestly, the visuals they don't scream like Tarantino for me. The dialogue definitely does, especially in the beginning, like the diner scene and whatnot.
Yeah.
I could hear Tarantino's voice throughout the entire script. The way that I think Quentin Tarantino, like he works on, when it comes to like dialogue and whatnot, and when it comes to action, like tension building, he uses subtlety more than you'll see in this film. And there's, I mean, I haven't read Natural Born Killers, but I'd imagine there's a lot more, as you say, like there's a lot more subtlety in this, and like the visuals, they scream like the emotions of the characters And like there's like these yeah. multiple shots of like dialogue where things are said of I can imagine if Tarantino directed it, they would just be sort of one shot. It would probably be a steady cam.
Mm-hmm.
It would probably be it would be way more calm as opposed to
more smooth.
Yes, more smooth as opposed to these double shots to where like you get to see like the actual like inner emotions pop out of these characters and whatnot, like where you see like those black and white shots or where you see like the actual like red and like the lighting change. Like it's very conscious that it's a movie in a way that it's not conscious yeah. of. It's not in praise. It's more of like painting it in your face and like sort of like twisting it like this carnival style mm-hmm. as opposed to Quentin Tarantino style, which is more of like more honorable, and it sort of like puts everything in its place but still lets you know that it's like a slight wink as opposed to like a grin, you know.
Yeah,
right.
Oh, I like that word you use, carnival, because like mm-hmm. I think what the film ultimately succeeds in at the end of the day is portraying America as this like fucking circus. Like it's like this circus of hell and violence.
It is.
And
it is, though.
Yeah. And that's what
especially the movie
yeah. does pretty well. I would say, yeah, like both this and Wild at Heart is, yeah, like depicting America in this like fucking like violent free for all spectacle.
Crazy
yeah.
Americana.
Yeah. But yeah. And then also, yeah, just I love the style of it. It's definitely a little bit more style over substance. Like the movie has a lot to say, but I think it definitely does get caught up in its style a lot.
For sure.
With kind of like the collage, like mm-hmm. the use of like projecting like different film onto backgrounds and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah. I really love that. That was beautiful.
It's like a collage. Yeah. It's like a non-subtle way of an intentionally non-subtle way of like of doing that sort of thing. They like splice
yeah.
Things like the Coca-Cola Polar Bear commercial, or were they?
That was funny as fuck.
But again, like that's how it is in America. Like you'll be watching some horrible tragic shit on the news, and then once they go to commercial break, you're seeing the fucking Charmin bears wipe their ass right. and talk about how they love Charmin.
And that sort of replicates human emotions too. Like one minute we could be manic, one minute we could be just like enraged, and another minute, like after the tears are gone, it's just chilling, you know, just chilling, and then going yeah. to like sadness, and then just like ecstaticness, and then like it's all over the place, you know. Can't really find your bearings, you know. You're just like chasing at the mercy of the feeling sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Speaking of collage and style, I would say what adds more to that style is the soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
The soundtrack is like a mixtape in a way.
Mm. It is.
And you know, forgive me for geeking out for a minute, but the soundtrack. Well, so I think Oliver Stone had picked much of the music out already, but he still approached Trent Reznor of Nine Inch Nails to be like, hey, like I want you to like kind of help put together this stuff, because there is music from Nine Inch Nails used in this movie. Mm. And yeah, pretty much Trent like suggested like, hey, like instead of doing a normal soundtrack, you should do it like how like similar to the visual style, like make it like a collage, and even at points remix and play two different like two or three different songs at the same time,
right?
To like even like make that chaotic energy like come out more mm-hmm. in the movie. There's a cool soundtrack. There's a cool mashup on the soundtrack of Jane's Addiction and Diamanda Galas that I highly recommend. It's pretty cool. Just check out the whole soundtrack in general. It's has some heat. Got Leonard Cohen on there. Got fucking Nine Inch Nails. Got Rage Against the Machine.
Nice.
Some dope ass.
I've heard that the Natural Born Killer soundtrack is cool, so I'm definitely gonna check this out.
Yeah. Yeah, the only thing I would like to point out is the song that they used by Patti Smith, which is the rock and roll N-word song.
Yeah,
I don't know if you knew about that.
I saw that in the like captions. Like a lot of the soundtrack I did miss because it's easy to like to get lost in the movie and lost in all the fantastics.
Yeah,
but I did see like that lyric and I was like, oh, like yeah, I mean like that. Well, when you mentioned Quentin Tarantino, yeah. That does make it does make sense that it was there.
Yeah. I mean, look, Patti Smith, I know she means well for the most part. And, like,
she's an edgy girl.
Yeah, I think essentially it was her trying to be edgy and be like, hey, like, you know how John Lennon said women is the N-word of the world? Well, I feel like
black. Well, also, Bjork said music was the N-word of the world. And was like, no, it's not, Bjork.
Basically, these white-ass musicians were equating that slur with, like, being a rebel of sorts. Yeah. And I'm like, that's not your... you're not in position to kind of reclaim word. That shit. But, like, okay. So, yeah. Like, I still love the song. It's a great song. But it's just like, yeah, it's like, oh, I feel very... strange.
I mean,
whenever I hear her say that.
You know, it's that weird like connection that those rockers have with what you call it with rock and roll. You know, like well, and
I mean they stole it from black people.
Yeah, and it's sort of like a remix, and it's like sort of a collage of their own, and it's like that twisted up way of them trying to. Makes sense in like trying to homage and like trying to acknowledge their personal like musical interests, but it comes off like a lot of the scenes and things in this movie, it comes off like uneasy, as making like the viewer uneasy, you know, because it's like, yeah,
oh yeah,
wrong.
No, yeah, 100%. But yeah, I guess I think we've sang a lot of this film's praises. Is there like any, I guess, negatives? I mean, I don't know. I know you and I, Archie, we've seen this movie countless of times, and I feel like, you know, like anything that you consume, that you go back and consume, you know, you'll have changing opinions. So has anything changed for you as you've gotten older watching this movie?
You know, I don't know if anything is like changed a lot. I mean, every time I watch this movie, I guess I see a lot more. I see a lot more the meaning that they're trying to make out of it. You know, I think that my opinions of like the language used and whatnot, and like the exploit of like the graphic scenes, like I've always thought that was, you know, it's definitely made me uneasy. But I also think that was like sort of part of the point. But it's, you know, like, I mean, that's it's a weird connection with like the intention based off like related to like the how it makes the viewer feel and how others will like whether or not they get the like the message or whether or not it'll just be used to perpetrate, yeah, like more violence and whatnot, and more like more senseless controversy. I guess like that, like something like that sort of message. Like I gain more styles of messages like that over time, and that, yeah, I guess like the depth of the messages and like the I guess I think about it differently in that sort of way, maybe.
Okay. What about you, Susan? Is there anything that you didn't like about the movie or you feel like you could have done better or any criticisms of any sort?
I feel like it served its purpose. On one hand, I think the aesthetic overall is cool, but I don't know. I don't enjoy... super violent stuff. I just don't.
No, yeah.
But it's interesting. Mm-hmm. It's fun. It's definitely a ride.
Yeah.
And
I think the the dark humor kind of adds to makes it a little bit more easier. That way it's not depressing the entire time.
Yeah, I understand them trying to lighten up the storyline, but at the same time, it kind of comes across as immature.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
It's a very immature film.
So many teens in the 90s, like, loved this movie.
This is a teen movie.
Like, this is an angsty, edgy teen movie. And, yeah, I feel like...
I see less angst, more edge.
Okay.
Yeah.
I feel like it's angsty, and so there's a song that Nine Inch Nails made for the movie called Burn, and yeah, like, essentially the sentiment is just, like, you know, being rejected by the world and wanting to burn the world down, and, you know, that's kind of what you kind of see in the movie with Mickey and Mallory, and then also the prison riot, too, which, I mean, I do love seeing a prison riot. I love that whole scene of them getting away at the end, and they're playing like the uplifting, like kind of cheesy Leonard Cohen music that sounds like church music.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh shit, like it's like they're saved.
Yeah, that ending is very it's
repent.
It's one of the cornerstones of like the artistic styles of this film, in that it's not going towards the real. Like even like the reality is not painted in like a real scape. It's all painted in this sort of meta frame of the fantastical, of the sensational, and it's like I think about the ending and like this happily ever after, like even like that sort of like twisted thing. Like that sort of Romeo and Juliet thing. It's like if Bonnie and Clyde had made it and they hadn't have died out in you know,
right,
like in a blaze of glory.
Well, yeah,
and it's so far from like the real, and it doesn't even mention that sort of thing. It's all sort of immediate, just like to grab like that instant gratification that you see. Like from the news, like from media, from violence, and all this sort of thing, all these sorts of things.
Yeah, I don't know. Is there any more that you want to say before I guess we start wrapping up this convo? Since I know you're a busy man and have to dip out soon. Mm.
You know, I don't know. Like, not too much. It's always been a very interesting movie. I've always thought Rodney Dangerfield's thing was like, it was always like so. It's still very jarring to me. Like, not just because of like the subject matter that. Oh, it's not just what Rodney's doing. It's just what he looks like while he's doing it. He's just a very grotesque man.
He looks so
eyes are bugged, and so... he's eating and whatnot. It's just, and it's, I could tell like his makeup is used to like just show like. Like every single like wrinkle and like gross thing on his face, and it's like that stuck out in my head. And yeah, like this is a very interesting movie. Like, it has an interesting message. It's definitely not something that I'll look to for like a lot of like super big like answers, or like to start
thinking about. Yeah, it's like, not that deep. Like,
it's not whatnot. A deep movie,
but it is something that that I could see myself going back to, like in the distant future, because it'll always be like it'll always be like a part of its time. It'll also be, I think, like it definitely does speak to something in the human nature, just to see like something fantastical, and it at least comments on that in its cinematic style and in like its message in some way.
Yeah, no, yeah, it definitely still rings true to American culture for sure. You know, times have changed, but I think the sentiments are, you can still kind of,
I feel like it's much worse now.
Oh yeah.
Like, we're so much more desensitized and violence is normal.
Oh yeah. Speaking of which, there's a shooting at Heights High School today.
At Reagan?
It just said Heights High School. I don't think anyone got hurt, but yeah, there's an active shooter situation.
I mean, there's Heights High School. It's a Heights...
Yeah.
High school called Heights High School.
Is it Houston Heights High
School?
Yeah, like yeah. The charter school?
I have no idea. I was on Twitter and I just saw it trending.
It's high school.
But yeah. Oh boy. I totally forgot what the fuck I was going to say, but yeah, no. I think yeah, overall I enjoy this movie. Oh, I was going to ask how did you get introduced to this movie, Archie?
This was I probably watched Mojo. I think I just watched a lot of Watch Mojo films or a lot of Watch Mojo videos back in the day of like top 10 horror movies and top 10 like celebrities yeah. and whatnot. And this was on it was on one of those lists, probably like top 10 cult classics or something like that, or top 10
okay.
Movies. And so it was put in my head, and before I knew who all these actors were and whatnot. And eventually I looked it up. And like it was probably on Netflix or something like that, and I decided to watch it, and I thought it was a bit of a wild movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And yeah, like that. And so yeah, like that. That's on. Like yeah, that's. I wish it was like a fun ass like a story and whatnot. It was like yeah, just the
oh
the
no.
internet sort of just through the yeah. media.
Yeah. No. Yeah, it was pretty boring for me. I mean, I grew up. As a Nine Inch Nails fan, my dad had the soundtrack, and then I guess just years later, I was just like, hey, like, what is this movie? That, because, like, I've always heard the soundtrack, but I've never actually seen the film, and then, yeah. It's, but yeah, I guess in terms of final thoughts, we can wrap up here. Yeah, I think, you know, it certainly has its flaws. It's a bit of a messy film, and it's not really deep, but it's an American film, and we can relate
it's
to
aggressively
it.
American.
It, yeah, we can relate to it on that level. I would give this probably a 7 out of 10.
Mm. I'll also give it a 7 out of 10.
How are you feeling, Archie?
I'd say 7.5 out of 10.
No, I feel you, because yeah, I'm torn. Between, yeah, 7 and 8. But I feel like, yeah, compared to seeing it, I think this is one of those movies that definitely benefits from showing it to someone who's never seen it before, just to witness their reaction yeah. to all of the chaos.
For sure.
Yeah, I got a kick. That I really wish we could have had Joe on, because, yeah, like, seeing her reaction when I showed it to her. And again, I showed it to her, like, right before the pandemic started. Like 2 years ago. So it was funny. Just all the pandemonium that has happened since then. Yeah. But.
Oh, okay, y'all. I just looked up the situation on the active shooter at Heights High School.
Yeah,
it was a false alarm.
Yeah. Okay.
It was just two students.
It was a false alarm. One of my little cousins goes there. I messaged her mom. She hasn't responded, but now I can see that. There was no shooting. Yeah.
Okay, so like what happened at Lamar a couple years ago.
Yeah. So there was no shooting. Nobody got hurt. Thank God. Holy yeah. shit. Okay. I was really nervous for a second. I'm like, what the fuck? Heights High School.
All right. What a dark way to end the episode, I guess.
Dark,
I guess is there anything? Yeah. Oh, yeah, but still, like the
it's
fact
still
that we.
Scary.
Yeah, we live in that landscape.
It's true.
Thing just like, oh shit, another active shooter scenario, oh fuck. Is there anything we want to bring up before we close out the show and get on to the next movie recommendation? Any current events or news or anything you just want to plug, Archie? Anything you want to talk about?
Nah, not yet. I'm Gucci.
Okay. Well, again, we appreciate you for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us.
Yeah, thanks for joining our little podcast.
Hey, you know, I'm so happy to be a part of it. Like, it's always, I always love analyzing movies with y'all. Y'all get great taste. Y'all choose good movies.
Oh, yeah, no, you have great takes as well. That's why I always love to hear your insight.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, so what's the next movie recommendation, Susan, that you got?
Okay, so I do want to see Pearl in theaters. I'm going to make you come and see
it. Well, I mean, we're already planning on seeing Pearl. I mean, I know. You might want to explain to Archie what this is.
But my movie recommendation is going to be Whatever Happened to Baby Jane.
What?
It's starring Bette Davis and Joan Crawford.
How old is this movie?
From 1961 or two.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It's the main theme of the film is lost fame.
Okay.
Like, you once had a big public image, but now you're
Is this
going
to be similar to Sunset Boulevard? Which
yes.
is another movie that Joe yes. and I covered last
uh-huh.
year.
It is similar to Sunset
and
Boulevard.
Speaking of David Lynch, that's one of his all-time mm-hmm. favorite movies.
Gordon Sunset. Cole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
Pearl is a prequel to, what's his name? Ty West. Ty West.
He put out a movie called X earlier this uh-huh. year that's about, like, porn actors in Texas shooting a porno and then some horror stuff
I know
stuff
it's
happens.
Supposed to be a small town somewhere outside of Houston. Yeah. But it was so fun. I loved it.
Yeah.
It has mixed reviews, but I really enjoyed
yeah,
it.
Yeah, X was, yeah, it was a throwback to, like, kind of slasher movies.
But it's 70s.
Yeah, but it's 70s. Well, yeah, it's definitely inspired by, like, Texas Chainsaw Massacre and slasher movies. Oh. Kid Cudi was in it, surprisingly,
uh-huh.
playing a porn star.
Mia Goth.
Those are the only two.
What was
notable.
The other lady?
I don't remember all the other ones. I just remember Mia Goth and Kid Cudi. And now it's just going to be Mia Goth.
Yeah. So I'm really excited.
Mm-hmm.
I can't wait to watch it.
Yeah, there's some good movies
but
coming out soon.
The first time I saw Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, I must have been around 8 or 9
oh,
years old.
So you've already seen this.
But it's been since I was 8 or 9 years old.
Boy, that
but
must
I
be...
remember it being scary, like really scary.
Okay.
And
we'll see.
One of my best friend in like the third grade, her parents had it on DVD.
Interesting.
And they would let her watch it. Yeah. And it's not for children.
Now, when you say scary, like what are you talking about? Are we talking about like something kind of like psychologically
yes.
scary?
It is psychologically scary.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm all about some good horror.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always trying to have an open mind and go back and see like older movies because I don't really go out of my way to like see stuff from the 50s and 60s.
Two legendary actresses in it who were also feuding in real life. They did not like each other at all.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Use that tension to
mm-hmm.
enhance the film.
And it did enhance the film. Made it extra scary. But I'm excited to watch it again.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you heard it here, folks. So you got 2 weeks to watch. Again, what's the title?
Whatever Happened to Baby Jane.
Whatever Happened to Baby Jane. A very interesting title.
Uh-huh.
Kind of funny. You wouldn't expect it to be related to. I mean, is it really classified under horror, or is it just kind of like
drama?
It's
more thriller than horror.
Thriller.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. All right. But yeah, 2 weeks until we review and talk about that. Yeah. Once again, want to give a huge thank you to our main man, Archie, for joining us for this good dialogue and conversation on Natural Born Killers.
Hey, shout out to I have to return some videotapes. Love you guys.
yeah, no, we appreciate it. And hey, if you ever have like a movie you want to talk about or you want to recommend or you think that we should talk about, just let
Let's
us know.
Get it.
We're always down to we always have an open mind.
Movies.
Let's get it. Movies.
Movie.
All right, well, I think, yeah, we've been talking for about an hour, so I think that we can wrap
set him
it up.
Free.
All right. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Torture. Give me absolute. of the world has crossed the threshold, and it's overturned the order of the soul. When they say,
cut. It's a fucking joke, right?